welcome to the sixth episode of the Women in Horror Month podcast. My name is Ashley. I'm your horror academic nerd, and with me, as usual, is Hannah.
What's up, Ashley?
What's up, Hannah?
Not much. Well, I shouldn't say that. A lot of awesome stuff is up, like we're recording this podcast right now, and we did an awesome interview with Christine Makepeace from Paris Cinema Magazine.
I know. Wonderful, isn't it? Yeah, well, tonight, you know, we're equally excited about talking to Christine. That over-enthusiasm is, you know, just. So thank you again, Christine, for doing this interview. We're basically going to be talking about women in print media who do horror and who love horror as much as we do. And, you know, we wanted to kind of start off this this episode by kind of talking about what Hannah has been doing pretty much her entire life, which is she's in that print media culture and how important it is and how, you know, finding her way into it through horror and, you know, just kind of making it personal, as well as, you know, when you get to that professional echelon and, you know, but where did that love really start? And I think that's kind of what we want to, you know, segue into today, because Christine touches on a lot of that labor of love type of, you know, ideas when it comes to doing print media. So Hannah,
absolutely.
Shoot.
Oh, wow. Well, as Ashley said, I've been making zines for a long time, and if you're new to the term zines, it's self-published magazines. So basically, you know, people cut and paste and create their own media with photocopiers. So for me, doing this episode with Christine was really exciting because this is sort of, you know, one of my most favorite things. And Axe Wound started about 10 years ago. Well, God, I always say that, and now I'm like, it's probably more than that. But one of the things in regards to print media is that when I started Axe Wound, there wasn't any space for women writing about horror in relation to, you know, feminism and culture outside of the world of academia. And so it was very much kind of not selfish, but I kind of like started it because I wanted to talk about it with people. And it was my way to like say, hey, let's have a conversation. And one of the things that I, you know, and I don't know, Ashley, if I ever told you the story about how I met Rebecca McKendry.
No.
Okay. So one of the things, like, from doing Axe Wound is I wanted to interview people who, aside from published articles, which I'll talk about shortly in relation to Paris Cinema, but was find women who are working in horror and sort of spotlight them. And one of the things that I looked at first was at print media. And so I pulled out all my, you know, I was going to say episodes, all my issues of like Fangoria and all those magazines. And I looked at like the masthead and I looked for female names. And that was the first thing I did. And I remember Rebecca McKendry, who's been on this show and is one of the, excuse me, I have the hiccups on the podcast. and she was one of the only female names that I saw. So I remember I didn't know much about Rebecca, and I reached out to her, and I was like, you know, I noticed that you're a woman, from what I can tell, and what's it like working at Fangoria? And so we met that way, was me interviewing her about that. And so I found that really there were very few women in print, in horror in general, but in print media like that. I mean, those magazines are always geared toward fanboys, and they still, it's getting better. I know Fangoria has gotten better. And so having a publication that not just looks at women, but also in terms of the genre, but also like talks about the films in a way that's, as Christine talks about in our interview, it's not really just about reviewing films. It's about looking at films in a more complex way, rather than I liked it or I didn't like it. And so I kind of, right, when I started Axe Wound, it was, I want to take the academic and make it more accessible, but also really articles that are timeless. And that's, again, another thing that came up in the interview was timelessness.
Yeah.
So I feel that, you know, getting to see Paris Cinema Magazine be successful is really exciting, and it's kind of, you know, inspiring. And other, I wish that, you know, there would be more magazines that will take note of the importance that of how do I want to say, of looking at films as a journalist in different ways than we normally see, which is, I like this movie or I hate this movie, and this is what happened in the movie. You know, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
But anyway.
So, okay. So what's the future of Axe Wounds? Where do you see it going from here? Because I know it's kind of had a lull. So
yeah.
What are you doing with it now?
So if, for people that have followed it, it definitely has been on hold because of, you know, various life things that happen when you, you know, life always has to get in the way sometimes. But right now is really exciting for Axe Wound, which Ashley knows all about. Even though she's asking me, she really knows. So I am venturing into the world of real, quote, real. I hate using the word real magazine publishing because zines are real, but I suppose I mean more
accessible?
Yes, I like that word choice. And so what I've decided, and one of the things that I've learned from talking to people who are in the magazine industry, is that I was a bit naive in the sense that I was like, okay, this next issue of Axe Wound, the sex and horror issue, I'm going to publish it glossy, and it's going to be, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be really professional. And then I'm like, well, wait a minute. I started talking to some people, and they brought stuff up to me that I hadn't even considered. And so I felt a little naive. I was like, okay, this is crazy. This is going to take a while. I need a group of people to really work on this. So I've decided that this next issue that has been pretty much finished for a while, I'm just going to do in what I do best, which is photocopy it. And I'm going to do like 100 of them, and that's it. And I'm going to keep doing that until I'm able to launch a crowdfunding campaign to start it as a more accessible magazine. But right now it's really exciting. The sex and horror issue that's been on hold, like I said, is done for the most part. There's a few pieces that Maude Michaud is writing a piece right now that she's almost done with about the experience of making DIS.
Yeah.
And because the issue is about sex and horror, and her work is very sexual and horrific as themes in her work. So she's writing about that. Yeah. So I'm super excited about that. There's pieces in this that have to do with horror porn, the intersection of that. And there also is a emerging theme I noticed on necrophilia, which is super I guess it makes sense. I didn't expect it. I didn't go out and say, I want to publish a lot of stuff about necrophilia. But when you think about horror and women, I guess sex with dead people is going to come up. So there's a lot of necrophilia studies in this. So I'm excited to share it. But I also have to admit, I have been sitting on this for a while, and I'm super ready to move on to the next issue once I get this out, because, and I'm going to announce this on this podcast, and it's the only place I'm going to announce it, so if you hear it, you'll know, I've already figured out what the next theme is going to be that I've been dying to do, which I can't do until this one comes out, which is I would like to do the 90s, and like an all 90s theme, because the 90s are coming up as being like the new 80s in a way, in not the new 80s, but like it's nostalgic. The 90s weren't nostalgic, now they kind of are. And I think that horror movies of the 90s, like we've talked about, I think have their own nostalgia because it was right before everything was super digital and there was still, you know, that lingering 80s feel. So not that I'm not super excited about this new issue, but anytime you've worked on something super long, you know you're ready to kind of explore something else. So I'm equally excited about getting it out so that we can, you know, get this in a new place. And Ashley and some other amazing women are interested in helping me make that happen. So I have a very good feeling about the future of Axe Wound, and we shall see. And worst case scenario, which isn't really that worse, it'll just be a zine like it always was.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned the 90s, because Alyssa, I forget her last name, forgive me, but at Think Progress, she just wrote an article about Clueless, and I think because it turned 18 this week.
Oh, wow.
And she kind of talked about how it still is relevant in our time, and, you know, what it, and how it kind of formulated, and how it kind of, you know, not formulated, but kind of, like, created these characters that have more substance beneath the surface that we originally like kind of saw as like mm-hmm. younger kids. And I think that's interesting because she compared, you know, those characters in that movie to teen movies that are going on now and the differences. And I think that was really cool because she made me see Clueless in a very different way. So yeah, that just goes to show you. And even on Twitter, there's a teensy bit buzz about, you know, Clueless turning 18. And, you know, so people, yeah, are starting to look back and reflect on the 90s, especially us, because that's kind of when we came of age,
exactly.
our age bracket. So even though we're 80s babies, but we really kind of, you know, started to learn about, you know, life and stuff like that in the 90s. So I thought that was really cool. So yeah, this will be a really interesting. I'm excited. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen with this.
I mean, yeah, and Ashley, I don't know if you have this experience too, but like I found that when I'm looking, you know, back in the day, like if I was looking for a slasher film, for example, which I know is both of our like go-to favorite subgenre, I'm like, you're like, oh, I want to find an 80s movie, like, because 80s movies are like the slasher era. Mm-hmm. But now I find that when I'm looking for a horror film, I'm equally looking at the early 90s because I feel like they blend in, and I never really realized that till I started watching some quote older films and was like, oh wow, this was the 90s, not the 80s. And then you get into like just, yeah, like the trends then are almost at a point now where they're retro, like Trapper mm-hmm. Keepers and like, you know what I'm saying? Like 90s has a retro quality about it that is starting, enough time has passed. So I think it would be really cool because I don't see a lot of it like, sort of like just focus on the 90s as horror, because isn't that, I mean, I think Scream came out in the 90s.
96, yeah.
And so I think it's an interesting decade to look at now. I'm really excited to delve into that. And, you know, I also plan to do, you know, focuses on mental health and horror and how that's mm-hmm. dealt with. So I love print media basically, because when you create your own media, you create the subject and you can do things that mean something to you. And Christine talks a lot about, you know, putting stuff in her magazine that she likes. And I think that when you're passionate about something, you know, it's other people are too.
Definitely. You gotta keep that in mind, that, you know, even though you're doing it for, you know, relatively selfish reasons, but people still share these ideas, these thoughts, these feelings, you know, and they're going to respond to it because it's genuine from who you are and from what you like and from what you want.
Do you like movie reviews that are insightful, thought-provoking, and delivered by somebody who's trained to critically dissect every aspect of a motion picture without ever having to use obscenities?
Then you've got the wrong show. Kruger Nation Horror Podcast is ready to feed your slasher movie and exploitation needs. There'll be more blood, expletives, and titties than you can shake your grandma's beetle flaps at. Visit www.krugernation.com.
Oh, good God, a butthole casserole!
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Nice to meet you over Skype.
Nice to meet you too.
Yeah, I'm so excited that you're going to do this podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Christine is the editor of Paracinema Magazine. It's an independent magazine. Originally, it began in Queens, New York, am I correct?
Yes, it did, yeah, when we were living in Queens.
And now based in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
And I know the origin story of Paracinema, but I kind of wanted you to give, you know, our listeners an idea of how you got started. So basically, you know, I know you've talked about in the past actually being a part of a horror film magazine staff, and you were kind of, quote, disillusioned by their practices. And
yes.
Right before you and Dylan kind of started Paracinema. So, you know, give everyone an idea of your vision of the magazine, you know, at that starting point, and what it has meant to you and genre film fans.
We did start it kind of on a whim, because I was writing for a magazine that plagiarized some stuff. I'll just say that. And that was kind of like, well, you don't do that. And then from there, the discussion kind of turned to like, well, what do you do? And what should you do? And what should it be? And we decided to make something that we thought should be a certain way. Horror is my first love. That I feel like that was my gateway genre to film. And so I love Rue Morgue, and I do really still enjoy Fangoria. I know a lot of people don't for whatever reason, but I like horror magazines, but I also like, you know, Muppet movies, and I like Brian De Palma, and I like other stuff. And I thought, well, why can't there be a magazine that talks about all that stuff? Mm-hmm. And not just that one genre? So that was really what started it. We wanted to do something a little more all-encompassing and a little less review-driven, more like discussion and analytical and film theory, for lack of a less pompous word.
Well, I think that that's, you know, one of the main things that makes Paracinema stand out from the other magazines is, you know, your magazines, and I believe you guys use the word timeless, you know, you can pick it up at any time. And in this episode, we're also talking about Axe Wound, which I also felt a kinship in a way to reading when what you said about the timeless piece, because it is, I think, very something amazing about being able to study one theme or film and then 20 years later, you know, it's still relevant, as opposed to some movie that, you know, is on Sci-Fi and in 5 weeks no one's going to remember, or and you know, it's it's great to see that happening.
Yeah, I think it really is. I mean, there's, you can talk just as much about The Shining now as you could, you know, 20 years ago. It's not something that you're going to stop finding things to say or correlations to draw, and I think that's good. And a lot of people have said, like, oh, you know, I checked this movie out because of something that I saw mentioned, or, you know, oh, I finally saw this movie, I can go back and read this article.
And that's, absolutely.
I like that people aren't reading it and then, like, tossing it in the recycling bin.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, a lot of the articles that I read have made me go on to see movies that never really registered on my radar. And one in particular is Frankenhooker.
Because
I read that article and I was so blown away by the author's analysis of it. And I was just like, I have to see this movie.
Yep.
I have to. And it wasn't something that you would think it was something I would have come across, but I never did. So I kind of just sought it out. And I'm glad I saw it and was able to make those parallels.
Yeah,
but that's, I really like that about the magazine as well. For me, it kind of helps the film community. It kind of helps us, you know, make those conversational bridges with each other. Because, you know, we're reading each other's, you know, thoughts and ideas about these films, and it gives us an olive branch to kind of start talking about it with each other, even whether it's on Twitter, whether it's in person. So I really like that.
Well, good. I'm glad that's successful then.
Yeah.
That was something that that was really important to me. So I'm glad it translates, you know.
Yeah, I really wanted to know, you know, I remember you telling me once, actually face-to-face, that it was like, you know, people submitting, it was a kind of a slow process, and all of a sudden it was kind of like we got so many. So,
yeah.
You know, is that pretty accurate? Is it still the same?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I feel like there are people out there writing this type of content, like not the, you know, six-paragraph reviews, plot, I liked it, but people that are like, yes, I want to write, you know, 3 pages about a Serbian film, or something, like, just, they're out there, and now they're like, oh, somebody wants this, people want to read this, and I think it's really great, it's heartwarming. that people are like, yeah, they're just naturally writing these pieces, and they're just finding that there's an actual audience for it.
And it's passion. I think when you're passionate about anything, you know, whether it's making a magazine or a film, it's, you know, there's something not very passionate, for lack of a better word at the moment. I can't seem to come up with words. But to sit and say, like you said, you know, this movie was good, this is what happened. But to really delve into a film, and especially when there's so much shit out there right now to wade through, to have someone like, I guess, Ashley, a good example would be you reading about Frankenhooker. It's like to have somebody actually say, no, this, I'm so passionate about this film that I want to share it on such a different level with people, that is contagious.
And when you are able to read that passion, it goes beyond a plot synopsis of, like, you know, something like Frankenhooker, which for me, you know, similar to, this is kind of in the same vein, Street Trash was a movie that I had seen a synopsis of, and I was like, I don't want to see Street Trash. And then I read something somebody had written, I wish I remembered where I read it, about Street Trash, and I was like, that sounds like the best movie ever.
Right.
So it's that passion and that thought and that analysis that somebody could put into it, it has now changed my opinion completely.
Or to tag on to that, if it's, it could be a movie that you wouldn't have picked up, but also what I love is reading about a movie I didn't like and then saying, oh, that's an interesting view. I think I want to rewatch it. And
yes,
that's another piece to that.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, because that has happened a couple times. And I wrote a piece in the magazine about Hobo with a Shotgun, and a film that I really enjoyed. And a few people after they read it said to me, I had to go and rewatch it because I didn't like it the first time.
See, and your article made me want to watch that movie, and then I finally saw it on cable, and I was like, this is a really good movie. So, yeah.
Good. That's what I like to hear. I was really impressed by that film. So it makes me happy that people would revisit something, not just based on something I said, but that anybody would write passionately enough about that would make people want to give it a second look.
Exactly. It's that shines through when you can actually inspire someone to, like, say, I need to rewatch that film.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In terms of submissions, you were saying you get a lot. What's the process like for you to select? Do you do that as a group? Do you do it by yourself?
For the most part, I would say, yeah, it is just kind of me. It's a super selfish process. It's like, yeah, I want to read that. That sounds good. I think Ashley can probably attest to that. I've been like, yeah, that sounds great. Do it immediately. Give it to me. But, I mean, I will run it past Dylan. Okay, like, do you think that this is, you know, would it be relevant, or is it, you know, could it be a cover? That's a big thing. Do you think that could be a good cover story? People have asked me in the past, like, will you give me an assignment, quote unquote? And that's something, especially with this format, that I'm not really, like, super excited about, because I want people to write from a place of passion. I would rather you write about a movie that not too many people have seen from this, like, really amazing, informed, passionate place than write about, you know, I can't think of, like, 2001 or something, just because you think I want you to write about that.
Right.
So, I mean, it's super informal. Like, just send stuff. Send me an idea. Send me a full article, and we'll go from there.
Now, can you talk a little bit about Dylan's involvement with Paracinema?
Yes, he is the graphic designer. He is the guy. He does all the layout. He designs everything. Every page is him. Because the magazine looks super beautiful, you can thank him for that.
It does look gorgeous.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've always been curious about the legalities of, like, getting movie stills and using and those and kind of reproductions of art that's from certain films. Like, how does that work?
Well, we try to use a lot of we got away from it for a little while, but we kind of cycled back. We try to use a lot of, like original art. And we'll contact the artists if it's something we came across or if we like their work. We've been known to commission a few covers here and there. If you use press photos that you actually own, it's fine. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of that. We'll will buy press packets like for older movies. They're not expensive at all, and we'll scan the image high res. It actually works better because you can get it to the quality that you want.
Wow, I never knew that.
And there's also a few sites and a few like archival sites that will have like these pictures that you can purchase for not too much money to purchase the use of. So it's not always easy. I mean, it's a challenge. We could just go and grab images, I guess, off the internet, but then they don't even look good. They're all pixely and crappy, and you know, you want to keep things on the up and up.
And it gives you, you know, when you have original art, it's just something else that's original.
Yeah, there's been some crazy good stuff lately in the Kill Bill issue. We had this beautiful, people thought it was a photo. It's like a grayscale pencil drawing of, you know, the bride in the coffin. Mm-hmm. And people were like, that was a picture. I was like, no, somebody drew that.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, definitely great content and visually gorgeous.
Thank you. That's awesome to hear.
Ashley, go.
No, I was going to say, I do want to get back a little to the community part of this magazine. Like, how have you seen readership grow? I mean, what was it like, I guess, marketing and kind of getting the magazine out there to kind of build, you know, how many people were actually buying it and purchasing and talking about it?
We kind of just fumbled into the whole thing. We didn't really know what we were doing. So I guess we were really lucky. We started out with a pretty strong MySpace base. I mean, it was that long ago now. Jeez.
That's how you can date something.
Yeah. MySpace was still a viable marketing tool.
Right.
We have a lot of people from those days that have kind of followed us. We've been very lucky to get involved with some really intelligent, dedicated film communities. There's been a few podcasts that have supported us. Cinema Diabolica, The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema. Like, that really took us in, and like, we're like, yes, this is something our listeners would like. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of followed us and grown. And there's a really great Austin film community that has embraced us quite a bit. It is very family-y. Like, I'll see people on Twitter that I didn't know knew each other talking to each other because of the magazine. Like, and it's like, whoa, you're my friend and you're like someone who's written for like 7 issues. Why are you talking? Oh, because of this thing? This is how you met? It's really crazy. It's great.
That's one of the things I love about magazines and zines as well, because, you know, again, that's what we were really looking at during this episode. And coming from, to the horror world from the zine community, one of the things is that, I mean, a published bunch of paper with ideas is like one of the biggest ways that you can form a community and friendships with people. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how much of a family type of atmosphere can come from a passionate publication. And that's how I think you really know you're on the right track, is when you can have it be like a growing family.
I think that's very true, because you know you're doing something right if that many people are responding, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I actually had a question that I wanted to ask. It's a little different from where Ashley was going, but one of the things in this, you know, internet time, for, I don't know what else to call it, digital world, the time of the internet, it's everyone's always saying, you know, go digital. I know with me they do that, and I'm like, no, because print, holding something in your hands, like, that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. How are you guys able to, obviously without giving details, but financially support print during this time? Is it from you guys? Is it funders? Is it advertising?
We have minimal advertising, which is on purpose, because we don't want to turn into something that you turn a page and there's an ad, you turn a page and there's an ad. That help, but the what we do have helps a lot. Most of it is, it kind of just pays for itself. Like, we have given a lot of thought to digital. I see the appeal, but I would never, personally, I would never just go digital. I would still offer the the actual tangible product. I have a Kindle. I rock a Kindle. I like my Kindle. Right? I get it. I get the appeal. I can have 97 billion books on my Kindle. But guess what? I still go to the bookstore and I walk out with like a bag full of books because I like that experience. I like the smell and I like holding it. And and I think a lot of people are still like that with magazines.
Absolutely. I mean, and also magazines are kind of, they're kind of like a conversation. It's sort of like an ongoing, you know, people respond to things from previous issues. So I think, you know, it has this growing life. So I imagine that once you get it started and have this big, you know, reader base, it's going to financially sort of, you know, like you said, pay for itself. People are going to keep purchasing it. But it's definitely during this time, it's a very hard, you see magazines folding all the time.
Oh, so absolutely.
It's a hard thing to do. Filmmaking, well, a lot, too.
And it's a lot of it is how big, like the print runs that a lot of these bigger magazines were doing. And then when they no longer had the, you know, Barnes and Nobles to support them, it's kind of like, hey.
Right.
You know? it's scary. I mean, when you're that big and then the way people are ingesting media changes, like, it's terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. How can people... Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I'm asking all the questions.
Speaking of digital, I kind of want to talk about the blog, because I also think the blog is pretty unique, like the website that you guys got set up. Like, you've got the Netflix Film Festival, and then you have Audiodrome. Like, how did those ideas and concepts kind of come to you?
Well, again, that's just, like, playing to people's strengths. Like, James Gracie does the Audiodrome, and he loves film soundtracks. He loves music scores, and he was just like, yeah, I would love to, you know, write, because he touches upon it on his own site, which is Behind the Couch. He wanted to do something more with it, and I think Dylan was like, why don't you do one a month over on the site? And he just each month takes a different score or soundtrack and discusses it, and we lay in tracks and samples. And the same thing with the Netflix Film Festival. Jacob, who writes that one, really likes Netflix Instant Watch. And he watches a lot of stuff. So he just wants to share what he's been looking at. And I still I find stuff that I'm like, that's on Instant Watch? What? I get so excited when I see his lists.
There are a few movies where sometimes when I discover it's on Instant, like, I flip out. Because I, like, don't have cable anymore. I just have, like, Netflix streaming.
Me too.
Yeah. And it's...
Same boat. Yep.
It's amazing. So once you, like, you get used to what's there and you kind of are like, okay, well, this is still here. But then when something new shows up or you discover something and it's there, it's like finding a fucking treasure.
A whole world opens up.
You're exactly.
Like, this is on here. Yeah. I'm the same exact way.
That's awesome. Yeah, speaking of which, I don't know, we don't have to talk about this movie because I will get all excited, but one of the movies that is streaming right now is The Bay, and if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
I haven't seen The Bay.
Oh, that is streaming
It's
now.
Probably okay. One of the best horror movies I've seen in years.
I will watch it immediately.
Yeah, I guess that's my Saturday night now.
New stuff, yeah.
It's actually the thing I love about it is that I am not, and I know Ashley will disagree with me, I'm not a found footage fan, but it is, if you were to take the idea of found footage and, like, it's basically like the best usage of found footage I've ever seen.
Oh, wow. Those are big words. So,
and I don't use them lightly when
I can't wait to look at it.
I can't. You have promised me that you'll email me after.
I will watch it and I will email you.
Okay. And if you don't like it, I won't be upset. I'll be fascinated why.
I'll give you reasons why, because I will be like, why don't I like this? And I will type out reasons.
I think you will like it, though. Okay, I just had to get that out there because we're talking about Netflix. And
good.
Yeah.
Do it, man.
Good deal. sorry. So, Ashley, we were talking about before I went on the website. That's why we went on to Netflix. Is there a separate community, do you find, that you attract just to the website that then finds the magazine, or is it mostly the other way?
No, I think that there definitely is. Also, we and I don't know how, I feel like Ashley might know something about this, but, like, Blogger is, like, its own community. And when we moved to WordPress, we lost a lot of people.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, like, Blogger is its own little, like, because people set up their blog role, and, like, that's how they see stuff, and they're just this own little bubble, and then in their commenting system, like, you're already logged in, just say something, you know? But
yeah.
WordPress is just a little bit different, so I feel like we lost some people when we moved over there. But we, yeah, there's definitely a grouping of people that read and comment, and will comment on posts from the site through Twitter that I don't think even necessarily, like, purchase the magazine, which I don't care. Like, it's great. If you want to, like, read what you want to read, man, that's why it's there. So I think that's awesome.
I'm excited to check out this. I haven't really looked at the Netflix part of the website. Now I'm all excited about it.
Yeah, it's its own little thingy, too. So you can just click on it and look at all of them. I know some of them popped off and or, like, came back on or something, but it's a nice little resource. He does it every month. It's awesome.
So I have a design question.
Yes.
So, again, I'm comparing a lot of this to kind of what I do because I'm coming at it from a very curious place, mm-hmm. in a way. And I know that with stuff, what I'm doing it is I'm actually doing it by hand because I'm not good at programs that do those things
for me. I completely understand that.
So I'm very curious about your creative process of how you want to, how you decide you're going to lay out your magazine.
That's all Dylan. He went to school for it.
Okay.
That's what he does. He is like a graphic designer by trade. It was a learning curve, I think, for him too. Like the first, if you look back at issue one, it's oof. He will cringe. I will cringe a little bit. But I mean, you just kind of fumble through it. And looking at other, I mean, look, I know Zine Production is completely different. Like Dylan wanted it to look like a magazine, you would pick up. He wanted it to look like People. You know?
Whereas, it looks better than People.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the charms of, and I use the word with air quotes around it, a lot of the charm of zines is how DIY it is. And I mean that in the best way. Like, it's so painstakingly created. Not to say that.
Oh, it's totally different. Yeah.
What Dylan does isn't. It is. He puts hundreds of hours of work into each issue. But, I mean, yeah, they're so very different. His is very technical, you know, getting margins right and sitting in front of the screen and clicking something 18 times until it sits in the right place, you know?
Oh, my God, I can't imagine.
So it's completely different, and it's so over my head. Like, he'll show me something, and I'll be like, that looks like the thing you just showed me. Not at all nice, but it looks like that thing you just showed me.
But the margin's a little more to the right.
Yeah, so can't you tell I changed the font? No, I
can't. It's a shade lighter.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But he's such a perfectionist. And, I mean, it shows, I think all the time he puts in and all the little things and tweaks that I might not even necessarily notice when you stick them all together and staple it. You're like, yeah, all
right. Right,
I see
exactly.
That. Awesome.
So how do you guys handle, I mean, clearly when you're working with somebody in a creative capacity, it's not always wonderful, mm-hmm. especially when you're passionate about something. Do you guys, I mean, I'm not saying it's not always wonderful. That came out a little.
No.
You know what I mean?
You're completely right.
How do you guys handle professionally working together when you might see something different or not necessarily agree on something?
Sometimes, I mean, I can only speak for myself. Sometimes I'm a bit of a bulldozer. Like, I will just start, like, pushing, and then I can see the face. I can see he's making a face. And I'm like, oh, this is work, Christine. Let me dial it back. Let me dial it back. Okay. Because that's, like, in my regular job, that's how I would be. I would be very single-minded, and I would push for what I wanted, and I would make all my, you know, points in my case, and I'd be like, and this is why. But so, you know, in a relationship, you don't do that. Mm-hmm. You talk about it, and there's compromise and all that fun stuff. But
and
like,
all that bullshit.
Yeah, and this is business, man, and this is what we're doing because I think it's right, and here are the reasons. You know, you just have to sometimes press the pause button and be like, but this isn't a reflection of the way I feel about you.
Right.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance to strike.
Okay. I don't know the relationship between the two of you, if you're friends or couples.
No, we're a couple.
Okay, I didn't know that layer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have told her.
No, that's fine.
So that's interesting, because when I asked the question, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We're totally, we're together. I mean, usually it's fine, but sometimes, you know, you can't let feelings get in the way, because, like, when I say, well, maybe you should do that, it's not me questioning your ability. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just me being like, what's best for the baby, you know?
So primarily then it's the two of you that come down when it comes down to making the actual decisions of what's in it. I see.
Yeah.
That's great.
I guess in highlighting women in horror specifically, I can move it towards that direction. Did you have any kind of unique thoughts when you were conjuring the idea of the women's issue?
Unique thoughts? Huh. Wow. You're giving me a lot of credit, Ashley. like, why did I want to do it? Or, like, what my thought process was?
I guess a little bit of both, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was struck. Well, there's many prongs to this. I am just me, and I like what I like. When somebody says, hey, you're a girl and you like that, I'm like, wait, what? Is this really a thing? Are we really discussing this?
Mm-hmm.
So very quickly in doing this, I found that people were shocked that I was a lady that liked these things. And by these things, I mean, you know, genre film in general. Mm-hmm. And, like, film analysis, I guess. And I was a little put off by that. Very quickly, and I don't know if it's because I am a woman or what, but very quickly we got a lot of female contributors, like a lot, maybe just as many male contributors, which I think is strange. I mean, wonderful, but I was kind of shocked. So I thought, well, geez, here's all these ladies, why don't we just put them all together in an issue? And it was maybe one of my favorite issues. It's so varied. And I didn't tell anybody, don't write about this or write about that. These are just mm-hmm. all the ideas that they came with to the table.
Like, and I, you said, that's what they're passionate about.
Yeah, and it's like, so I think when we first, this was a while ago now. Ashley, do you remember when that issue came out? I don't even remember.
It was February of 2011, I believe.
You're the best. that was like, for me, that's like eons ago, but I remember when we first released like the cover and what was going to be in it, somebody asked me, oh, did you assign these? And I was like, no, why? Well, they're all really different. And I felt like saying, well, what did you think everybody was going to write about? I don't get why you would think it would be any different than if it was just like a regular mixed bag issue. Like, because you have, maybe I was reading too much into it, but my immediate thought is like, are they all supposed to be like romantic comedies? Do you want all Billy Crystal movies? Like, I don't understand what you think women watch and write about.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, again, I'm a little hypersensitive, you know, because sometimes people do come at it like that, but I was really kind of surprised.
Well, I think it's human to be a little hypersensitive about that, because I think all of us, I can only speak for myself, but I feel this consensus across genre film with females who are actively involved in this subculture, if you will. It's like you get that hypersensitivity because, you know, people don't look at you and see someone who would possibly be interested in writing about these kinds of films.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been my experience as well. I have coworkers even today who look at me just like, I would never think you were into horror films. And they're just like, well, why? Like, why do I have to play to a physical type to be interested in these films? So I don't think that what you're saying, you know, I don't think you need to walk on eggshells, because it's a reality for a lot of women who are involved. So
yeah, it's definitely something, again, and I never thought about it like that until this, because people point out, like, you're a lady. I'm like, yeah, I am. But, like, it doesn't, like, make any of what I have to say or what I think any different than what you have to. I mean, maybe I come at things with a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it doesn't make it less valid or more valid just because. So I think that was, like, the whole thing with the women's issue was just the pool was there. Like, it was a full swimming pool full of ladies that wanted to write. And I was like, why not put them all together? And I guess it is, I didn't, and my concern was that it would come off as like a novelty. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be like, look at ladies can pick up a pen. That's not what I what I wanted to do. I just wanted to be like, look at these badass ladies fucking tearing it up. And look at, they fill the magazine. That's how many there are.
That's awesome.
So hopefully it came across that way.
Definitely.
And that issue sold out so fast, too. It was probably one of our fastest selling.
Yeah, I got one free, and then I bought six issues, I believe it was six. And then I literally said, you can borrow this issue, because I didn't know how many I was going to have at the end. But, like, my close friends just swiped it out of my hand and just never gave it back to me. So, yeah, the interest was definitely there from males and females in my
life. Yeah, it was, and I think because, I'm hoping that because it did sell so well, that shows that that we didn't present it like a novelty, that it was something that people were actually interested in, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, clearly, it's, yeah, I think it's great. What is the current issue?
We'll
talk about that.
The one that's currently available is our Kill Bill cover. It is, it has two, like, kind of dueling articles about Kill Bill. I thought it would be interesting to kind of see two different takes on that film and where two different people went with it. So that was really fun. We're currently working on issue 20, which is kind of got like an old guys in film unofficial theme. I don't know how it kind of came up, but there's like the cover is a Charles Bronson cover.
Nice.
Which is pretty awesome. A lot of exploitation, a lot of crime film in that one. We're still kind of putting that together. We've had a few personal bumps, so it slowed that down a little bit, but it's up for pre-order on the site. That's the one that has the article on Serbian film in it. That was a film I had no interest in at all.
And I haven't seen it, and I have a hard time like finding the right time to see it.
That is completely understandable. I had heard a lot of people say stuff like, oh, I don't need that anymore. I'm too old for that. I don't need to be shocked for the sake of shock. And when people say stuff like that, I tend to fall into that category. Like, when you say that, you're basically telling me it's of no quality. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, stuff to try to be extreme. And I have other things I could watch, but then I read this article and I was blown away. Like somebody watched it and gleaned this from it. I need to see it because clearly there's something else there.
I'm interested to read it because I know that there's a lot of political commentary.
Yes, I didn't know that. Nobody had said that.
Yeah, and it's still, regardless of the value, it's still something that I have yet to be in the. I just feel like, oh, today is the night I want to watch Serbian film.
I know.
Yeah, so I agree.
But you guys have seen it.
Yeah, I have not, and I'd be for the same reasons as you. It's like some films are just like, I never find the time to watch something that heavy. I just, it takes a certain headspace for me to sit down and watch certain films.
Well, it like, kind of ruins your night. Like,
yeah.
Are you prepared for the rest of your day to be terrible?
Is it only a day? I mean, I feel like it would ruin your week. I don't know.
It honestly didn't stick with me like some things have stuck with me.
Okay.
There are some things that have like leached into my brain and I can't excise no matter what I do. It wasn't that bad.
Well, that's good to know. Maybe it would be easier to watch with another horror fan like Ashley or, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's something I want to sit and watch by myself.
I did it by myself. I completely understand. Maybe you don't want to do it by yourself.
Yeah. Which is funny because that's not like, I mean, I watch anything really and it's rare that I feel that way. The only other time I think I felt that way was when years and years and years ago before I had ever seen the original I Spit on Your Grave, I had heard so much about it, you know, talking a long time ago that I remember I was like, okay, I finally need to watch this movie, but I'm getting my friends together. And this feels like these, since then, well, of course now, you know, the movie, we all know it so well, but this is the first time in like, since then that there's been a movie that I felt that way about. So I'm interested to read that piece.
Oh, well, good. I hope it makes other people want to see it, too, because I know, like, there's a huge section of, like, the film community that I'm more familiar with that had just completely written it off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, yeah, I don't need that.
No, it's a fascinating cultural piece.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is. It's which I didn't expect. I really didn't. Yeah. It was definitely sold to me as like disgusting and depraved and of no value. And I'm like, oh, well, I can just go watch something else.
Right. So are you able to tell us a little bit about your future issues that you have in the works, or?
Honestly, it's kind of in flux right now. We have a few pieces held over from this issue 20, but I'm not sure where those stand. I don't know. I would like to do more theme issues, but those do take a lot of planning. We did the women's issue. We did the revenge issue. I want to do a Godzilla issue.
Oh,
but
sweet.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't feel like enough people talk about Godzilla.
I agree. And there's but, a lot you could look at.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. There's so many movies, and there's just so many themes, and it represented such an interesting time in history. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like the theme issues. I would like to do a Vincent Price issue. I've been pushing for that forever. Mm-hmm. A Muppets issue, I would still love to do. Like, a whole Henson issue. But, again, maybe that's just me that wants to read that.
Oh, no, there's a whole group of people that
especially, yeah, Godzilla, all of it. No, there's a market for everything.
Oh, well, awesome.
I've already thought of people when you were talking that would have loved it. I'm like, oh, if you did that, I know someone that would.
Oh, that's good. Because, see, that's the thing. Like I said, it's super selfish. I'm like, well, I want to read that. That's how I pick theme issues and stuff. I'm just like, I want that.
Well,
it shall be done.
It's awesome. And that was actually one of my questions was, you know, what your process is to come up. Like, do you just, like, sit on the couch and you're like, oh, that's a good idea? Or do you, like, have a brainstorm process for your each issue?
For like I said, the theme issues in this last Kill Bill one, that one was a little calculated. We do think like, well, what would we like to read about? What do you think would make a good cover? What do you think would be interesting, you know, theme to build around? But a lot of it really is just people sending me ideas. Like, one of my favorite ideas recently was an article about the movie Chronicle and how it relates to young adult fiction. And that's something I didn't know I wanted until somebody said they wanted to write it. I was like, yes, that is the most amazing thing. Why isn't it not in my inbox now? So a lot of it is that, just like people coming up with ideas and just pinging it off me and like, yeah, absolutely.
That's the art of being an editor. That I think, I don't know that a lot of people really, if they're not really, if they just pick up a magazine, not really understand how it works. I mean, being an editor is an art, and you know, you really are finding the gems and what's different, and being able to select it is a talent. And so clearly, you know, you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
I did want to get a little personal. Not too personal, but personal.
Personal, actually.
Now, you've written for the magazine, and, you know, you've written about Hitchcock. I believe you've written about De Palma. Like, you know, I think what I want to ask is, I guess, what's your favorite? Do you have a favorite? I mean, like, it seems like, because I'm like, oh, Christine wrote an article. So I'm like, is it there a time where just the mood hits you to write about, you know, The Dark Crystal or something like that? Or is it serendipitous?
Sometimes, I'm going to be completely honest with you, it's like, hey, we got a page to fill. Oh, crap.
I hear you.
Yeah, I best do something. I wrote a De Palma Hitchcock piece. I think that was because I wrote a lot in the first, like, maybe one or two issues, because there was not many other people. So I wrote a lot. I think the Hitchcock De Palma one was something I was like, I would like to write. I had it in my head, and then Dylan was like, we need to fill some room. And I was like, oh, I can bang this out. Because it had been ruminating, like I'd been thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote something about The Neverending Story a long time ago. I don't even remember how long ago. But then, like, the Hobo with a Shotgun one was, I saw Hobo with a Shotgun, and it literally changed my life. Like, I was like, this, people can make these movies, this movie exists. So immediately upon seeing it, I was like, I want to write something. And it turned into something way too big for the website. And then we were just like, let's, okay, magazine. And then Dylan was like, let's do a cover for it. And I was like, that was my first cover. And what was that, like issue 15, 17, something like that. I waited for my cover story. I hung in there and I finally got one.
Well, when the right thing finds you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you guys both write. You know how it is. You can't, sometimes you can't force it. It's just if something inspires you. And, I mean, I am lucky to be in a position where if, you know, all I'm doing is reading other people's stuff or writing stuff for the website and I don't necessarily get inspired, I don't have to write anything. But then if I do, I'm like, look what I wrote. Boom. Yeah. Put in the magazine.
Oh, I hear that. So I, Ashley, do you have any questions you want to ask?
Yeah, you know, just like quick, again, personal questions, like who are your favorite filmmakers?
Ooh, well, Hitchcock is my favorite filmmaker, period. De Palma, after that. I mean, modern filmmakers, I'm unapologetically in love with Edgar Wright. I love Rian Johnson. What has he done? 3 movies now, and I think they're all spectacular. Catherine Bigelow. I mean, I know that's kind of like Catherine. Yeah, no, she's great. I Joss Whedon. Anything that he does is fabulous. I think there's a lot of amazing creative people out there right now, and I hate when people say like that film is dying. People always say shit like that.
Hollywood like, is dying, but dying. Film is dying.
It's alive, you know? You just need to look for it. Of course, if you just want to go and see what's in, you know, your megaplex down the street, you might be disappointed, but there's more amazing stuff coming out that I can't keep up. And people just need to look. Damn it. I get so frustrated that there are still, in this day and age, this day of the internet, that people still think the only films being made are the ones that get released into their, you know, through their Regal Theater, their Lowe's Theater down the street. Bumps me out. It really does.
It is very depressing because, I mean, there's just no films are getting in the theaters right now that are any good. And it's the worst. And I mean, just like to sort of go back to the magazine, it's like looking for a magazine for, you know, your magazine might not be on every single shelf next to Rue Morgue or Fangoria in every bookstore, you know, but that doesn't mean that it's not something people should be saying, I'm going to look for something that might be more quality. Not that those magazines aren't quality.
No,
that's not what I meant.
It's a different thing. We're doing something completely different. Yeah,
exactly. So same thing with looking for movies that might be more underground or so. Just finding media that is people are passionate about, it isn't driven by advertising, is always going to take a little digging. Well, and most people aren't doing that.
And I feel, and I'm still surprised that this is the case. I still feel like there's a stigma around films that didn't get a theatrical release.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing this. Like, I get maybe like 10, 15 years ago, anything direct to video, you were like, oh, maybe it could be of questionable quality, but it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't. Just because something went, you know, video on demand or never got a theatrical or maybe got like a 15 theater release doesn't mean that it's not good. Like, come
on.
Yeah.
Exactly. In fact, if it got a theatrical release, the odds are it sucks.
But there are still people that think that way. It blows my mind. Maybe it's because I'm definitely entrenched in a certain community that when I go outside of it, I'm like, you people still exist? What are you doing?
That's the thing about being in like the bubble of a community, whether it's like a film or a feminist community or any kind of group. It's like, then you're like, oh, wait, other people aren't all...
Yes,
it's
very strange how you can become very comfortable.
And I found that people are very unwilling to even come outside of that box. It's like you have to almost push them if you feel. It's frustrating and it's kind of sad too.
People don't really believe that they're gonna like stuff. It's like you know, like, oh, well, I'm not going
to. Yeah, if, oh, well, Hollywood, you know, didn't tell me to like it, and MTV didn't show a commercial for it 17 times, so it's not going to be good. Like, they don't understand that like, heavy marketing doesn't necessarily equate to quality film. I get it. I mean, maybe at one point my little tiny 15-year-old self was, like, totally on board with that, but... Not so much, man.
That's, you know, it's funny. When you're 15, I think that is what you, that's the marker. Because I've thought about that recently. It's like when you're young, for the most part, I think that, you know, people are very influenced by the media, clearly. That's no secret.
Yeah.
But you really have to get to a point of media literacy and thinking for yourself where you can actually, which is sadly not, Ashley and I talk about this all the time. I mean, we just don't teach critical thinking. Mm-hmm. So it's so hard for people to find things even that exist because there's no one to really show it to them if they don't have a community and they don't know where the community is. So to find through magazines and all kinds, I mean, magazines I think are the greatest way, but you're really able to reach people that might not, you kind of reeling them in. You know, if they find a magazine, they're like, oh,
Just as a small example, a very small example, like I talked previously on the last episode about going to University of the Arts here in Philadelphia, and, you know, all of us, you know, fresh, you know, going in as freshmen in college and, you know, not being as cinema literate, so to speak, and, you know, just like, yay, I want to be a screenwriter, yada, 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 and then, you know, going to a film 101 class and seeing, like, all of these, you know, German expressionism films from the 20s, you know, all of these, getting that, like, you know, that cinema IQ and, like, not knowing how much we were going to like and appreciate these films that we were seeing because we were just like, oh, boo, it's black and white. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a consensus with all of us. We were just like, wow, these films are so good. And then, you know, it helped us kind of seek it out a little bit more. So again, it's like, it's something that you have to have a love for, I feel like, as a base. Yeah, an open mind for it. And I think even if you start, you can just even start with, you know, teenagers even younger than that and like say, hey, here's, you know, there's always that foundation, but I feel like, you know, if it's something that you are interested in let's even go even deeper because all, you know, everyone consumes some certain aspect of media or multiple medias, if you will. So there's an interest there, but if you have the opportunity to push people in a direction that gives them a diverse outlook on film, you know, as the example, you know, you could do a lot and be able to really get people interested in independent film and things like that. So.
Mm-hmm. And think deeper, like, you know, having articles that are timeless like that and really delve into things. I think if somebody just to keep on the whole thing about like someone younger may who doesn't really have a connection with the community finds that they might, it might make them think, oh, wow, there's more to it than just this is the plot and this is what the person thought, you know, because there's just needs to be more writing that involves thought.
I think we've really moved away from that with you know, the internet. I hate to, you know, keep pointing my finger at the internet, but
damn internet.
But I mean, I love my internet. But a lot of, you know, film review now is snarky. It's,
I'm glad you said it.
it is. It's to get hits. It's to generate comments. It's to get people to the site, or it's to scoop people. Like, I saw this first. Here's my opinion, and it's less about celebrating the film. Like, I love when I read something that somebody wasn't crazy about, and they tell me why.
Mm.
So I know now you didn't like it that much, but you didn't like it for these reasons. I might still really enjoy it. Like,
the trolley comments. This movie sucked ass.
Yeah, it was stupid, and the director should, you know, like, come on. And I feel like we've moved away from, I don't want to say like a kind criticism, but just like, balanced film criticism and review. It definitely, people want the extreme so that they can, because people don't care why you're on their site as long as you're on their site.
Exactly.
I think what kept That's so funny that you say that, Christine, because honestly, I think when I first started blogging, I can't remember how many years ago, but when I very first started, I was, again, just, I really wanted to do really thoughtful pieces, and it took, and I found myself, you know, I felt like I had to almost write almost on a weekly or even daily basis, and then for me, it was just this one comment I received from someone from a message board that I was involved in the X-Files community. I'm just going to put it out there. I was an X-File. I don't care. But, like, he said, "I love your blog," and that's what kept me writing. Just doing what I was doing and doing it naturally. I had my own process, I had my own thoughts, I had my own structure. And for him saying he loved it was what kept me going. So yeah, you're right. Just that it takes. I think those pieces that you're looking to, you know, grab and, you know, possess, in a sense. It takes a lot out of you. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of just. It's a lot of just going. You know, just.
It can be thankless.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I just had this question popped in my head. I'm not sure how it's going to come out to verbalize it. But so one of the things as a horror zine maker, magazine maker, blogger, however people are celebrating horror in their own way in the media, underground. I think one of the things that we're seeing more of with the, this movie sucked ass or whatever, I think there's like a personal piece to it that it can become so incestuous in the community that someone could say, well, I heard this person, blah, 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 so I'm going to write shit about this film. And I think sometimes when it gets like that, I've noticed there's this, almost like sometimes there's either jealousy or there's personal involved in, I don't know if that as an editor, have you found that in dealing with people, it's changed in any way your view of someone's work?
Yes.
And you don't have to elaborate, but I was just curious because I've experienced that.
It's very rare, very rare. I just said about the snarky blah, 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 that whole scene that I'm not really into. I like to think that because we don't present that we don't get people like that. So I feel so lucky to have dealt with dozens and dozens and dozens of the most amazing, talented, giving, selfless, awesome, intelligent, modest, fabulous people. And then there were like three that were the worst. And they were the worst in that way. Very self-serving, out to show this person up, or, you know, I want to stick it to this director. Stuff like, weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
That I don't have any interest in.
It's awful, and I just think that there's more, because, you know, when you had, before people were able to just publish whatever they wanted online, I mean, a film review, filmmakers, I feel like, were further away from many people. They weren't as engulfed in or engrossed in the process. So now I think, especially just, I mean, another tangent, one of the things that I find frustrating, which I found increasingly frustrating when I made my first short film, is people that will review a film by saying all these things are wrong with it technically, but they don't even know what it's like to make a film.
Yeah.
And and they're coming at it from this, I'm above this, but I can't appreciate it for the work that went into it.
And there's ways to express that.
Exactly.
You do not have to be attacking, and you do not have to be a know-it-all, because you don't know it all. You don't. And
exactly.
People can write and disagree with something or dislike something, but still come from a place of respect. And I feel like because of the anonymity of that word sounded weird when I said it, the anonymity of the internet, people don't feel the need to be respectful.
Nope.
Well, and like you said, Christine, I mean, it's, you know, when you're explaining why, there's legitimacy to it. If it's a real why, not like a because it sucked ass why.
Yeah.
But like, and that's where, it's like if somebody says, I hate Hitchcock, you would say, well, or no, if someone said, Hitchcock sucks, let's just say they said that, you would say, okay, you might not like Hitchcock's films, but that doesn't mean Hitchcock sucked.
Exactly.
And that's where the break needs to happen and doesn't happen.
Yes, like, because we can have a dialogue. If you were like, I've never seen a Hitchcock movie I liked.
Right.
Oh, really? What have you seen? Let's talk about this. I'm interested. What didn't you like? Because I want to know your perspective. But if you're like, Hitchcock sucks, how come? I don't know, he just sucks.
Right, exactly.
Come on, that's not an opinion.
I just find myself all the time wanting to be like, okay, just because you don't like it doesn't mean it sucks.
Exactly. Different strokes for different folks. Like, come on. Like, we don't all have to like the same stuff. And it's cool if you don't like stuff. It's just the way in which you don't have to be a jerk about not liking stuff.
Yeah. What film, I guess, you know, from whatever point in your life, what film, I guess, do you feel, Christine, made you into the person you are today as far as Paracinema is concerned? And the film, and your friends and the people you've met?
Oh my gosh. Like what film made me into the film fan I am?
Wow. Yeah.
Kinda? Oh, jeez.
That's a tough one.
Either, no, I'm gonna go with the two that popped into my head immediately and just roll with that. either Poltergeist or The Thing.
Nice. Yay. Very good. Very good.
That had to be. It's one of the two.
Nice.
Or both.
Poltergeist scared the shit out of me as a kid.
Right?
Holy
that
fuck.
That face pulling off scene.
Oh my God.
Scarred me forever. And
oh
it's
my
never
God.
That scary when you watch it again. It's not disturbing at all now. But it
still gets
paralyzed with fear.
Yeah.
It still triggers that feeling.
Oh absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, even as a teenager, having seen that movie as a kid, I remember having a nightmare about it. And it was just like, phew, good choice, Christine. That's all I'm going to say. I like it. So can you give people that are listening, I know, you know, it'll be in our show notes, but how people can find your magazine?
They can go to paracinema.net. It's paracinema.net. That's the WordPress site, so all of our posts are there. You can buy back issues. You can pre-order issue 20. You can look around and click on things. We have years and years and years of back posts, so there's a lot to look at.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for talking. I feel like we should keep going.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. And keep making amazing print media.
Hey, thanks. You too, lady.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you, guys. It was great.
Have a wonderful night.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Kachiche Castle?
Kachiche.
Kachiche Castle? How do you say it in Slovak?
Kachiche. I don't know. We're stupid Americans. You preserve the social hierarchy.
I'm educated in American public school. This is a movie about a woman who killed people. See, there's the difference. There's when you talk to me and there's when you talk into the microphone.
This is going to be the longest most snowing episode ever.
The Horror, a punk, femme, queer, and real sophisticated approach to horror films. For more information, visit thehorror.net.
Okay, well, we don't have any feedback this week, but, you know, again, to send feedback on the Blogspot page, it's whmpodcast.blogspot.com. Don't hold me to that. oh my God, I don't know our URLs. Bad, bad, bad. But yeah, we're on Blogspot, we're on Podomatic. You know, you can send us feedback. We have email, you know. So if you're still interested in sending any kind of feedback, good, bad, indifferent, any questions, comments, concerns, please contact us.
Absolutely.
But we are now on iTunes at some quest on Facebook. And
yes.
So I was able to, you know, maneuver my way into iTunes and get us there. So iTunes is just another way for you to listen to us. If you have an iPod or some kind of MP3 player, you want to take us on the go, definitely go to iTunes, type in Women in Horror Month, and we come up, and you can just kind of download those interviews for free. Interviews,
yeah.
Episodes, same difference. and that's about it for this week.
We really do love your feedback, and you can also find us in all of the wonderful parts of social media, Twitter, we're at WIH Month, and then we're also on Facebook, which is facebook.com/womeninhorrormonth, and we're on Tumblr, womeninhorrormonth.tumblr.com, and of course, womeninhorrormonth.com, which also has our episodes on it as well.